Good morning, 7:40 here on the Mighty 690, and it is time for our chat with folks from K-State Research and Extension's Wildcat District. Joining us, we have Crop Agent James Cooper. How are you doing, James?
I'm doing pretty good.
Good to have you on here, and I know that been kind of watching around in the fields around, and of course, wheat harvest here in southeast Kansas, well underway.
Yes, that's right. I mean, we've just gotten started, heavy in wheat harvest, and so this looks like a lot of fields are wheating. Harvested right now, and I know, it's pretty good weather outside to do that. It's hot, and dry, so that works out for harvest.
Yeah, definitely one of those things I would assume, we don't want moisture when we're dealing with this.
Yes, yeah, and so, the fact that we've kind of had a few, probably a 4 or 5 days of hot, dry weather kind of really dries down that wheat crop and allows us to get in there and get it harvested. And so far, as far as yields are concerned, I kind of need to call the co-ops and see what they've been up to. But wheat yields in the 60s and 70s, even into the 80s, that has been happening. And that's pretty good in comparison. The test weights have also been really pretty good as well. Some of them are above 60. And so, that's a pretty good test weight for considering. And what I've been hearing from, at least from the Oklahoma updates that I kind of get, our yields are looking pretty good in comparison to a lot. I'm talking about like the western part of Oklahoma and all them. Of course they've harvested a week ago or 2 weeks ago, and yeah, we're looking pretty good in comparison to that.
So. Now, how does Southeast Kansas compare with the rest of the state as far as, timing goes, the condition of the crop? Are we ahead of schedule a little bit? Looking at as far as timing?
Yeah, we are actually ahead of schedule. And so, generally speaking, you think about mid-June is about wheat harvest time, but really we're pretty close to average, just a few days ahead of schedule, really. And the rest of the state is a little bit farther behind. And so it just seems like we've gotten some heat that stayed here in comparison to the rest. And it's actually, they're getting rain. And so, they've gotten one rainstorm and now they're getting some more rain. And that's been slowing them down a lot. And it's right in the area where there would have been the same amount of harvest time frame that we have gotten. So, we're starting it off, honestly.
Well, the other thing is, does severe weather, we're thinking about big hail and that sort of thing, can that cause damage to winter wheat and that sort of everything?
Yeah, the worst thing is the wind. The hail is an issue earlier on when it can hit the heads and kill the heads, but now it's the wind. It just pushes it over and lays it over, and you can still harvest it, but it's a real pain. And so, you got to get that header down on the ground, and it takes a while, and you kind of lose some, honestly, when that happens. So, for the most part, we've had a few heavy wind here and there that's kind of blown some stuff down, especially like around Cherokee County. I've heard that they had some heavy wind, and there's some other places, on this side of the on the state line here. But for the most part, yeah, most of it's standing up pretty good. So.
Good deal. Anything else as far as other crops that is sticking out to you?
No, the corn's going along. It's tasseling right now. That's pretty early, actually, for tasseling. But so it's growing pretty well, too. And right now, it is chugging along, really. It's using a lot of water. We need some more rain. That's what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Because that's really kind of an issue. And the soybeans, of course, they just started planted in there, and of course the double crop soybeans we planted soon, and so they have some soil moisture just because most of those fields were fallow, so they've been collecting water. But yeah, when it gets hot like this, it takes a lot of water.
I'm just surprised at the height of some of this corn that I've seen around. It's just for this time of year, it just seems pretty incredible.
Yes, exactly. Normally it's a little bit later than this, and this year that corn got tall. We seem to remember what last year's corn was like, it stopped raining, right? And so the beginning of June, it just stopped raining. So the corn got pretty short and it got really hot and it stayed very short. But this year our corn looks way better. So, now we need some rain to fill up them kernels and get the maybe a little bit cooler temperatures, because pollination becomes difficult when you get into the 90s. And that's right when they're starting to tassel. So we haven't really hit it quite right with the temperatures, but hopefully we'll get some good pollination during the evenings when they cool down a little bit. So we'll see what happens with that.
Okay, so. Absolutely. Well, hey, since it is the first day of summer, and we mentioned having water in soil, it's an important topic as we get into the summer months.
Yes, absolutely. And so before we get, I do have a field tour.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We do want to mention your upcoming events.
Yes. And so July 19th, this was just brought to me, actually. And so July 19th, we're going to do a corn and soybean field tour. And we're going to talk about diseases as well. And that will be July 19th at the Southeast Center there in Parsons. And so we've got a whole lineup of different diseases that we're going to look at. We're going to talk about cropping conditions. And basically, you know, every spring we tour the wheat varieties and all that. And now, most of the time, we haven't really done this in the past, but now we're going to do some looking at corn and soybeans in the midsummer as well. And so hopefully it doesn't match up. I mean, farmers will have some time basically in the hottest point of July. There's usually not a whole lot going on then. So right before fairs. And then we're going to do this tour, and I think it's really going to be a good show. So, yeah, July 19th at the Southeast Research Center.
Okay, excellent. Very good.
Yeah. So, you know, today I kind of wanted to talk about water and soil and how that all, basically the math of all of that. And so, of course, you know, this is the first day of summer. And so relevant to talk about, yeah, the heat that we have. I mean, just the last past couple of days, we've had 90 degrees and it's going to be 90 degrees for a while now.
Yep.
Yeah. So,
looking like that.
And so, you know, crops, like every other plant, they really start to turn up their water usage when it gets this hot. And the reason is because they transpire. Just like, you know, we sweat, they transpire. And so it actually helps keep their leaves a little bit cooler. So their stomatas are opening, water vapor's coming out of it. You know, they use a lot of water. And so basically as they lose this water vapor and they photosynthesize as well, I mean, they can they're constantly pulling water up. And so crops, they can use up to a third of an inch of water a day. And so I'm talking, you know, like, I mean, an even third of an inch over an area, like how much rain has fallen, they can use up to a third of that inch a day. That's a lot of water. And so, I mean, that is a maximal amount, but I mean, it just goes to show like how much it actually needs to rain to carry a crop along. And so this makes the water stored in the soil very important because it's not going to rain that much. I mean, there's no possible way that it's going to rain a third of an inch of rain a day. Like, it just doesn't happen here. So, you know, during the summer months, June, July, August, even into September sometimes, we're using the water that's stored within the soil. We need to have some of that stuff. Just like they do in Western Kansas. I mean, it's even more important there. But here, I mean, we're also still draining that soil that we were, or the water from that soil that we were getting in the spring.
Sure.
And so, you know, that comes important when we're talking about soil types and soil depth and all sorts of other things, because that's the storage facility for that water. And so in different soils, they can contain different amount of soils and different depths of soils as well.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you mentioned, you know, it's kind of like banking it up a little bit. And you mentioned Western Kansas. I mean, it's fascinating to me that over time we've actually made that area more humid because we've, you know, the center pivot irrigation and, you know, all this transpiration that you talk about. I mean, that's actually made it to where we have issues like in the summer, but it actually is a lot more humid than it ever used to be.
Yes.
Back in the day, people could get by running evaporative coolers for cooling their homes in Western Kansas. You can't do that today.
Yeah. It's odd how that we can actually pump enough water to make it humid. And, you know, there used to be rivers and stuff in Western Kansas, and that doesn't happen anymore. It all goes down to the ground. And all that humidity, you think it would, like, well, that means more rain. Well, it means more rain farther away.
Somewhere else.
Yep. It doesn't mean more rain here. Yep. So, you know. But
how do different soils hold different amounts of water then?
And so the soil itself, it's different based upon textural classes, right? And so, I mean, you know, the soils in this area, they range from like a silty clay loam to just a straight clay, actually, which means usually over 40% clay. And I mean, that's heavy. And of course, other soils in Kansas, I mean, Western Kansas, we were talking about, I mean, they're mostly sand. I mean, some areas are almost pure sand, but, you know, there's some clay in there and some other things, but there's quite a bit. And so sand, it doesn't hardly hold any water, like you would imagine. I mean, sand, You know, the porosity is high, but still it doesn't hold on to that water. There's nothing grabbing onto it. The matrix potential is low.
Well, that's interesting because from a, like a gardening perspective, I feel like most people think, oh, yeah, I want sandy soil.
Yeah.
Because it's easier to work.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And so you think, you know, you want to add a whole bunch of sand to your soil to make it really like loose and like that. It's not really that good of an idea, actually, especially in this area when you're mixing it with clay, you'll just end up with concrete. but, you know, and so adding some sand, it can help in some certain situations to help with drainage. But when it talks to actually water retention, really not the best. So, you know, and of course, clay, it does the opposite. A heavy clay will hold a lot of water, but then it doesn't want to give it up. And so even the most driest clay that you can, I mean, just completely dry, even if you bake it in the oven dry, that clay is actually still has a lot of water left in it. And so the potential, the matrix potential, basically the holding of that clay onto that water, onto the tiny little surfaces of the micro scale, I mean, is powerful. And there's really no way of getting that water off. And so there's no way for roots to get that water off too. So even though clay can hold a lot of water, plants can't suck that water off that clay. And so that's what we're talking about here when we're saying plant available water. It's the difference between field capacity, and field capacity is how much water a soil can hold, but it's not draining. And so it's gravity that's not pulling that water away. And the wilting point, which is where the plant can no longer suck the water off. That's the storage capacity. It's the plant available water. And so the field capacity, you know, is the maximum amount of water that that it doesn't drain from that soil. There's no runoff. There's no infiltration farther into the subsoil. It's at a static state. And so when we measure this, we're measuring this in inches per foot of soil. That's what we can. It's easier to visualize when we think about that. Inches per foot of soil. And so a silty clay loam, you could probably have around 2.2 to 2.5 inches of water per foot. A heavy clay, we're talking about 1.8 to 2.0 inches of water per foot. A sand is usually like less than one. And so that's how much water a plant can use in a foot of soil. And the ideal water holding soil, you know, it has a little sand. I mean, a silty clay loam has a little sand, it has a little more clay, but most of it's silt. It's about 60% silt. And so really like 10% sand, 30% clay, 60% silt, that's really the ideal soil for holding water. And, you know, it just so happens that we have pretty close to the right type of soil in this area to hold on to water pretty well. But there's actually not that much soil here in total. That's mm-hmm. the real issue. It's yeah. not that we don't have the right type of soil. We might have a little bit heavier clay than what was perfect, but we just don't have enough of it.
And is that, I'm assuming, just because we are so close geologically down, you know, we're so many, you know, this is the lowest part of the state right
yes.
here.
Yeah, yeah. And so we don't have the history of the rest of Kansas. I mean, in western Kansas, you know, a lot of it was blown in, the Lowesses that was blowing in. That made their soils, and you know the northeast part of Kansas is the old glacier soils, and so but here, you know, our soils didn't really form in the same way, and so we have a lot less of it because we didn't have that ancient history of soil to build it up, and because we had more rain here, we had more erosion over those thousands of years sucking all that soil off too, and so you know here we have clay like. 2 feet of clay maybe, and then a little bit of sandy clay loam, and then that's pretty much it. And so I mean we have bedrock beneath
yeah yeah I was trying to pound a t-post in yesterday. There's just some parts where you're just like, well, this is not
yes,
working.
Yes, exactly. I mean, there are some parts of southeast Kansas where we've had, you know, been farming for a while, and a lot of our topsoil eroded off. There's nothing left. I mean, it's just some clay and then rock. So you know, and there are some soil textures around here, some czars and some other things that there never was topsoil. I mean, it's just
well,
eroded.
And two, if you get over into like Chautauqua County and parts of the Flint Hills over there, I mean, yeah, it's just rock pretty much
yeah,
over there.
Yeah. And so, I mean, there that's kind of just a different soil formation. I mean, when it forms, it washes away over time. And so, I mean, they're talking a foot and a half of soil and then some broken bedrock and then that's it. And so, I mean, that's why you can't really farm there. It's all big, tall grasses that can reach into deep into those broken subsoils.
Sure. This is a super interesting topic, James, and I'm glad that we have you here for another segment because, believe it or not, we're already getting ready for that time. Yeah. So we're going to go ahead and take a quick break. We'll have a check of Fox News, local news, and then we'll be right back at it talking about, I think, a very interesting topic.
Yeah, how to
topic.
Make that applicable. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. How we make this kind of applicable? What do we do with this information when we talk about how much water the soil can store? Going to be an important topic here, especially as we head towards the summer, which starts today. So we'll be right back. Back here on the Mighty 690 with Wildcat District Crop Agent James Coover, and we continue our chat here talking about how much water the soil can store. So a recap for the listeners that just joined us, James, been talking about kind of the different types of soil that we have in the area, what sets Southeast Kansas makes it a little bit unique as far as, you know, maybe other parts of the state.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, we were talking about, basically we have good soil here that holds water, but we don't have a lot of soil. And so that's really been our issue in this area. It's not the type of soil. It's actually the fact that we don't have near enough of it. And so, I mean, we don't have the endless soils of Northeast and Western Kansas, the sand or the glacial soils or anything like that. So we kind of have what we have. And so that's, you know, what we have. We have lots of shallow soil. That's a lot of clay, too. And so really, we have about 2 to 3 feet of soil in most crop fields, I would say. And generally speaking, I mean, it's hard to get a soil probe more than 18 inches, but there's probably some more soil after that. You get to bedrock, right, pretty soon. So in some places, some of those fields have less than 18 inches, depending on if it's a hillside that's been eroded. Some are, the rocks are right at the surface, honestly. And so that means that we have, in the end, 3 to 6 inches of water holding capacity in that soil. That is not a lot.
No.
And that's in the best conditions, too. And so a good field will have 3 to 6 inches of water holding capacity. When you're talking about plow pans, which there's a lot here in Southeast Kansas, I mean, we're talking about, we're using the top 8 inches of soil. So if you imagine how much water can be held in that top 8 inches, not very much, a couple of inches at the most. So eroded fields, I mean, they might have the top 8 inches removed. And that top 8 inches is where the silty clay loam that we were talking about before is held. And beneath that is where the heavy clays are. And so the good soil is removed. Now it's just the heavy clay. And the heavy clay has less water holding capacity. Its infiltration rate is also incredibly low too. So whenever it rains, a lot of it runs off. And then, you know, it doesn't hold it as well as the other soil too. So we don't get every inch of rain that falls. That's basically what it comes down. Southeast Kansas, we have a lot of runoff. We have a lot of erosion. We don't get, yes, it does rain more here than other parts of Kansas, but a lot of it runs off too. And so fields, we have a lot of low infiltration rates because of our heavy clay and because of our plow pans and some of the other, the topographical aspects. Our infiltration rates are fairly low. I mean, if you can imagine a rain in Western Kansas, pretty much all that goes in the ground. I mean, it's sandy. It doesn't rain that much. That's why there's not a whole lot of rivers that flow there, is because it all just soaks right in. Right. And so here, of course, we have a lot of rivers and they fill up when it rains. So the one technicality though, I mean, when we're talking about field capacity, the difference between field capacity and how much, technically a soil can fill up with more water than what it will hold. Basically, the porosity of soil. It looks like it's a one dense thing. Really, about 50% of that soil is air. It's kind of odd to think that there's that much air could fit inside of a soil, but it is. And you can replace about, you know, 80% of that air with water. And so 40% of that soil can be water, but it's not going to hold it there. I mean, that's mud. So, I mean, if you hold it up, it's going to drain. That's not what we're counting. That doesn't really count. As far as that, because eventually that, you can get a little bit of that water in your crops, of course, because basically we've made a hydroponic system. I mean, it's ponded, but it doesn't really count for the long-term water. We're talking about going into the summer, we're talking about long-term water, and that's the water that we need to, the water holding capacity of the soil.
Sure.
And so, you know, you can't really count on that other water long term.
Gotcha. Well, I mean, we mentioned earlier that some of these crops can use up to a third of an inch of water per day. So if soils can only hold 3 to 6 inches, I mean, how can a crop survive when we go a couple weeks without rain here?
That's precisely it. Yeah, that's the problem. And so, you know, you hear this saying all across the Midwest, but here it might actually be true. 2 weeks away from drought or flood. And I mean, that's been said here. It's actually kind of true a little bit because, I mean, really, the first, if a third of an inch, that is the maximum amount. This is pretty much what corn is using right now, actually. It may be even using a little bit less. But the real rates, I mean, between a fifth of an inch to a third of an inch. And so it's not always using a third of an inch a day, depending on the crop size and how much transpiration, but also evaporation is happening from the soil. And so crops have the ability to use water at a slower rate. That does not mean that they will be using, they'll be maximizing production. But of course, you know, they have ways of protecting themselves from the sun. Right now, I bet you the corn is starting to curl up their leaves. What that is, you know, it's protecting itself from the sun. It's keeping itself away from the heavy sun, and it's closing its stomatas. That way it's not evaporating soil. It can do all that stuff to reduce its overall water usage, but it does reduce its production as well. And so, you know, right now, we don't really have the full water profile. And so I bet you a lot of cornfields out there are getting pretty dry. And that's why they're starting to curl their leaves. And they'll start to curl their leaves earlier and earlier in the day and later into the evening. That's when you know a real issue is. If you're talking about seeing leaf curling at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, not a big deal. Even if there's a lot of soil water out there, they could still be curling leaves at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. But when you start to see those leaf curling 8 o'clock at night or 8 o'clock in the morning, that's when you know that soil is dry and there's a drought and there is actual production loss when it comes to that corn or, you know, the wilting of the soybean leaves or something like that. And so if there's not sun pounding on them and they're hot and they're still curled up, that means that they don't have enough water. And so we don't have a full water profile right now. If you go down, there's a little bit of soil moisture, more than what I expected. As you dig down there, but once you get to a foot and a half, 2 feet deep, there's nothing. I mean, it's still bone dry. I mean, right now, it rains, the crop uses everything that rained. And there's been hardly any runoff whatsoever. We've had, like, maybe one runoff event, honestly. Seems like different areas got it at different times, but that's pretty much it.
So we're kind of living paycheck to paycheck on this rain, if
that's
you will.
That's exactly what we're doing. We're living paycheck to paycheck at this point. And if sometime we get fired from that job and we miss a paycheck, it's going to be desperately bad. And so some places, in years like this one, it's going to be winners and losers. It happens every time. And so because the summer rains are all humidity showers, and so some places will get it, some places don't. You know, some places will get 2 inches of rain, 5 miles away, they get absolutely nothing. That happens every single year this time, and that's the difference that it's going to make within the yields, because the places that miss those rains, that means that they're going to have 2-3 weeks without rain, and that's when they're going to have that yield loss because it got so dry, because there's just nothing stored within the soil. And so, you know, the corn tasseling right now, that's at its maximum usage. And it's also the biggest yield loss from a drought. And so right now is when we really need that soil moisture. And I mean, it's progressing along pretty fast. So really, we're talking about grain fill for the next, 3 weeks or so. So if we do get a good rain, we're kind of set when it comes to that corn crop. If we get one good rain, honestly, maybe this weekend, we don't know. But when it comes to the soybeans, of course, they're pretty tiny. They got a much longer flowering period, and so their risk period is longer, but at the same time, they can adjust because they have a longer bloom period. Corn, it's got to be there. I mean, it's got to be there when it's tasseling, when it's silking. Otherwise, it all happens all at once.
Gotcha. So now, as far as Southeast Kansas compared with other parts of the state, do other parts of the state have the same water storage in the soil as we do?
I have a pretty much a lot better water storage. in total. And that's the real key there, is in total. And so, you know, most of the state has much deeper soil. Like we talked about before, western Kansas, a lot of sand, but it's deep sand. Northeast is where, I mean, you're talking about the Corn Belt. And, of course, the Corn Belt, it's known for the Corn Belt because of its endless soils, you know, and they can just hold a lot of water there, and so that corn can use it whenever it's there. And so corn crops can root up to 3 to 6 feet deep. I mean, sunflowers actually have some of the deepest roots, and they can go over 6 feet deep. Corn roots are usually 3 to 4 feet on average, but here we just don't have that much soil. So even though that corn can go 4 feet deep with the roots, I mean, the soil is 2 feet deep, so it doesn't matter. I mean, they're going to stop at the most limiting, at the zone where they can no longer go farther down. For plow pants, that's not very deep, but, you know, broken bedrock, it doesn't really count. So it makes soil conservation in this area incredibly important, more important than pretty much anywhere else, because if we lose that 6 inches of soil, which in a lot of places we have, that means we've lost one-third of our water-holding capacity. And yes, our organic matter also has an aspect on all of that too. We didn't really talk about that, but the organic matter percentage holds a lot of water as well. But it means that in this area, we have the highest amount of rainfall. We have the highest amount of erosion. We have the highest amount of water loss and therefore soil loss. But we also have the least amount of water holding capacity. And so it all comes together to make soil conservation the most important in this area than pretty much anywhere else in the state.
Well, and speaking of soil conservation, I know that's a whole nother topic, but I mean, what are any things that, you know, farmers can do to, you know, help aid that?
Yeah, so we've talked about, and there's all kinds of things that we talk about with that. And I mean, really kind of comes down to, I mean, A, of course, cover crops basically anytime the soil is bare, especially during that spring time frame. That's when really issues happen. And I mean, we're talking about, you know, basically proper rotations, terracing, I mean, whenever possible. And one big thing, and I know that farmers don't want to hear this, there are some fields that need to be taken out of production. We've just used them up, honestly. And so there's not a whole lot of soil there anymore. And they kind of just need to be altered in what they're growing, basically.
Could those fields, you know, recover, if you will, after a period of time?
Can, yeah. Mm-hmm. And but we're talking decades.
Sure.
I mean, maybe even longer than that.
Yeah.
And so there are some fields in here in Southeast Kansas and in Kansas in general, they will never be crop fields again. I mean, and that's just the reality of it. They will really never be crop fields again, but that's where the pastures are. And so, and I mean, forages of all kinds that we grow here. And so that's just part of it, honestly.
Still use them for something.
Yeah.
Now, one more question for you. Okay. Has there been any serious research on the seeding, you know, all this, the actual, to get rain, you know, actual, like, to actually, you know, people talk about,
you mean like
the
stuff they did in the 1930s,
yeah,
where they like flew.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have not seen anything recent.
Sure.
But I mean, the idea of it is there, but I think in practicality, it doesn't work in the massive scale. I know they actually do that, like, in China and some other places. They really tried to do that on a massive scale.
Hmm.
But here, I mean, that would be releasing a lot of that copper
or
something.
Yeah, they've got to use different, like, silicones or
whatever. Yeah, silicone to, like, you know, make that little bead that the water humidity traps onto within the cloud and all of that.
It just doesn't seem very cost effective.
No, it doesn't. I mean, the amount of stuff you had to put into the atmosphere to capture that humidity is massive. And I can't imagine that it
silver
would actually
iodide there in various salts.
Yes. Yeah. Silver, not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, they've been doing some like stuff in Dubai or whatever. I mean, if you're in a desert,
yeah, maybe
anything's worth a shot, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Especially, you know, when you have a lot of money and no rain.
Yeah.
Yeah, in that area. Here, I don't think that would. Yeah, it works very well.
Well, that's kind of interesting. So you do have an event coming up for those who've, who didn't hear in the first segment. So can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so July 19th, we're going to do a corn and soybean field tour and disease update. That will be at the Southeast Center there in Parsons. And so July 19th, we're going to start about 8:30, run till about 11:30. And we have all kinds of topics. We're going to be going real fast. We're going to be out in the field most of the time. And so taking a look at all the crops that we got growing out there. So a lot of cool projects at the Southeast Center that we got kind of take a look at.
Good deal. All righty. Well, James Coover, always good to have you on here.
Yeah.
And appreciate the chat and some interesting stuff.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Okay, that is Crop Agent James Coover here on the Mighty 690, and we will be getting to an early bird edition of Open Line. That is next. You're on KGGF.